Coming up, it's Media Matters with Marie Buskey and Marty Gibson, discussing the media through the RCR lens.
Right here on Reality Check Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome back to Reality Check Radio. You're with Marie and Marty, Eminem, Media Matters. Oh, you and I had a wee phone call last night. We were just a little bit excited. Mine may have been due to a little bit of beer, but I was very excited.
what a relief in the sense that, just contemplating the direction things would have taken. If Kamala had a won.
Yeah. So of course, overnight, since you may have heard I was on with Paul and William McGinty, which aired this morning, but we recorded at 6 o'clock. And of course, since that time of recording, a little bit more's come in. There has been a decisive victory in the American elections for Donald Trump. The pollsters, I mean, I have to admit, the pollsters, I do wonder, do the pollsters say these things? Do they say things like, oh, it's incredibly tight, it's, we just don't know, it could go anyway, because they're hedging their bets and they're too terrified to actually say the way that they really think it's going to go? What do you think?
Well, there was an article about an Auckland University pollster, I think, congratulating, you know, the pollsters, saying how close it was going to be. It wasn't really that close. I mean, my suspicions about a lot of it had been that there was a fair amount of prep for the steal. I thought the polls coming out about New Zealanders preferring Trump, I thought were overcooked. And I thought a lot of it was prepping the population for a bit of skullduggery. And there certainly would have been some skullduggery, but the great thing about Trump having won is that we've got a greater chance of finding out where it was. So, I mean, there's a great post on Zero Hedge I saw this morning, which was, you know, had a graph of the number of votes that in each election, and you can see a pretty consistent level for the Democrat vote. It's pretty much the same. It seems that a lot of elections are just won by Republicans staying away, and a lot of Republicans turned out for Donald Trump in 2020, which would have normally been enough to easily win him the election. But the Democrat votes mysteriously doubled. And so where it's gone back to now is pretty much where it was in 2016.
Yeah, it's incredible what happens when you have a lot of in-person voting, isn't it, really? But it's an amazing effect. So you've got three electoral cycles now. You had 2016, which Trump admits he didn't expect to win. I mean, that bombshell from Trevor.
And did he say that?
Yeah, so it's what Trevor Loudon was saying, that Trump hadn't prepared a transition team in 2016, which is generally what they do. And he said, was that an experience, or was it the fact that he, you know, thought, oh, maybe I won't win, but I'm going to give it a go?
What Labor did here in 2016?
Yeah, so then there was no transition team, which then meant he kind of had to be left with these people that got pulled in together that were already around the swamp anyway, on the fringes of the swamp. So he was left with deep state operatives that, as we now know, and he said that they worked against him actively inside the White House. So he's not going to make that mistake twice. He's already got a team ready on the ground to start running and moving forward in the lame duck period, which pretty much starts now. And just to give a recap, if you've woken up today, like if you avoided it yesterday and you've woken up today and you're thinking, right, what's gone on is that you need 270 electoral votes, college votes to win. He has currently officially got 277, but it's looking like he'll tap out at 306. Michigan is looking likely it'll go, and he'll possibly also pick up Arizona and Nevada as well. If he does, it could even be 311. So it is it's a decisive win. But more than that, the chant from the Republicans was make it too big to rig. He won the popular vote. That's massive. He didn't do it in 2016. He certainly didn't do it, well, officially in 2020.
Yeah, well,
he sure as sugar did it this time around. And more than 5 million votes on the popular vote and counting ahead of Kamala Harris. So that sends a very, very clear message to all of those who are on the other side of politics that actually the American people have spoken here. And if you want to try any of your jiggery pokery, like not ratifying the election and putting up objections to the legitimacy of this election, I think the American people have kind of spoken.
Yeah, and I mean, there has been the guy going around saying, you know, we're just going to have to tell people that we're not going to certify the election. The judges at Supreme Court are just going to have to not ratify it. And is it on the Supreme Court or the Electoral Commission?
No, it's not. It's the those that sit on the college, but there are, you know, obviously people from both sides. And I think it was a senator from Maryland, a Democratic senator from Maryland, that was mooting that they wouldn't ratify it. But
I'm prepared for civil war once we do that. It's bizarre. But yeah, if it had been closer, that would have been more of a worry. And I was really worried, I was worried about rigging it. You know, if those numbers had have come in again the way they did for the Democrats in 2020, he would have lost.
Mm.
And I just can't believe people got that excited about Joe Biden. I mean, it's worth looking at this graph. Maybe we'll post in the show notes or the post by Zero Hedge. But that was the kind of thing that was never talked about in New Zealand's media. And I, as you know, I get a bit grumpy with people trying to import foreign conflicts and lay them over the top of Kiwis. I think it's unimaginative and it's also dangerous. But yeah, the New Zealand media just being all in and singing from the same tune as we discussed last week, the Washington Post, the New York Times, CNN, MSNBC, really, I mean, the tide's gone out and they've been swimming naked. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see how they turn around from that. Because, I mean, if you look at, say, Radio New Zealand Live, shock, disbelief in Harris camp as Trump surges to victory. And, you know, Corin Dan are posting that video of him saying, I'll be over there reporting on it from a New Zealand perspective. It's like, yeah, you'll be over there reporting on it from a more government, less freedom, toe the party line perspective, Corin Dan. You'll be over there reporting on it from a, we're just about to get a $24 million funding raise because we played ball with Willie Jackson and his plans. So, yeah, I mean, it'll be really interesting to see what happens in the New Zealand media space. Because, yeah, I mean, watching Thomas Laughlin reporting from Komi Lala's old university, and really, you know, just how crestfallen he's looking.
Oh, well, I heard a report. He said that he goes, everyone disappeared and they closed it all down. So we actually had to go inside and do some work.
Yeah, it's not looking good. Ooh. It's looking great, Thomas.
So,
come on, Coughlin, pull yourself together.
You and I mentioned it, I think, several weeks ago, as the comparison, and I started seeing it more and more starkly a couple of months ago, when all the celebrities started being rolled out, was the comparison in the campaigns between 2016 and now. And I kept looking at with Kamala thinking, oh, surely you're not going to go back to this playbook because it didn't work for Hillary. So why are you doing it again? You know, the rolling out of the celebrity endorsements, the gaslighting, treating anybody that isn't on your page. I mean, as Hillary had her basket of deplorables, well, then, you know, they called them garbage. Now,
well,
Trump
did.
Oh, yeah, Biden didn't. Yeah, well, the campaign, essentially. And the beautiful thing about the Trump team, and it was a team. If you listen to the Democrats, it was all Trump, Donald Trump, Donald Trump, Donald Trump. But it was a team. It was a spread of people from Tulsi Gabbard to RFK Jr. to Elon to Vivek Ramaswamy. They distributed as a team And it was divide and conquer, and that's what they did. And I think that is what got a lot of people out to vote. They were up in all metrics, the Republican vote. They were up in the black vote significantly, up in the Latino vote. The youth vote saw a huge turnout for Donald Trump. Now, I think that that was largely due to all the work that the Turning Point team, which is led by Charlie Kirk, who was also one of the strategists for the campaign, the Republican campaign, did directly to American campuses in engaging college students with a debate one-on-one.
In a really respectful way.
Yep. Yeah. On these issues to actually help to get these kids to think.
Yeah. And I mean, the most telling thing Charlie Kirk always said, you know, his punchline was always name one of Kamala's achievements. What's her best achievement? What's turned you round to vote for her? And it was, you know, if you look at it, it was a very much battle of love versus fear. You know, people didn't love Kamala, they feared Trump. And the reason they feared Trump was because of that 80-20 inverse. You know, her coverage in the media was roughly 80% favorable. His was 80% negative. And so, you know, you had almost archetypal, this battle of opposites, the individual versus that group intersectionalism of neo-Marxism, the nationalism, you know, American identity versus that globalist neo-feudalism, humanity versus race, humanity versus sex, biology versus gender, you know, as I said, democracy versus neo-feudalism, and values versus party politics. So you saw those Democrats crossing the floor and joining the team. RFK Jr., I'm really excited to see what he does. Tulsi Gabbard, really excited to see what she does.
Did you see Trump's speech at the end? And he, when he got to RFK, and he goes, "Now I tell Bobby, you know, give me the oil. You know, stay away from the oil. But you can do whatever else you want to do." Now,
I mean, how's that going to look?
That is incredible.
Yeah, make America healthy again. Now, you know, again, it's one of those things. If you're a journalist and you're wanting to write a story, you know, the story of how over the course of Anthony Fauci's tenure at the NIH and the various agencies he's been involved in, America, and this is since the early 80s, has gone from 5% of Americans having a chronic illness to over 60. So how come? Racism rates.
Yeah.
Tanking reproduction. You know, those, if they can shine some light and the media have to start reporting on that, it's going to be a great time. And I mean, yeah, there were all sorts of weird things when the celebrities shilling for Kamala, as you said, while they're sweating about Diddy.
Funny how a lot of them were, you know, there was a great correlate to Diddy parties and celebrity endorsement.
They've got that real, you've got to do it, that urgency that Leonardo DiCaprio has talking about climate, you know. And there's the weirdness of such weird people calling J.D. Vance weird. The fakeness of Kamala, you know, pretending to talk. I don't know if you caught pretending to talk on a phone and then holding it up and the camera's on. And he just said that whole conversation was fake.
Yeah. But see, that's the thing. The whole campaign was inauthentic, right down to those celebrity endorsements. And here's this is what the Democratic campaign hasn't realized. When gaslighting was at its most potent, you know, it was like that spell in Harry Potter that made everybody believe everything that you said. That was at its most potent right around the riots of 2020, right? They could say anything and people would believe them. Their potency is gone. It is no longer have we got togs, togs, togs. We're well into undies, undies, undies now. That potency is gone. People are not believing it. So when they start pulling out all these inauthentic tricks, everyday Americans are just looking at that and going, yeah, nah, we're not buying it.
Also, the amount of fear we've just had laser beamed at us. You know, fear, 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 fear. And, you know, old Fear Factor Joe Rogan, you know, being involved. And people who do kind of sound calm. And I never know what to make of this, but, you know, there is that thing of, you know, we talk a lot about gender, but there is, there's not a lot of examination of masculinity versus effeminate men, you know, and I think the formula had been to tell women that they were in danger from men, and so their savior was Big Daddy Government, and so, you know, the kind of men that get put forward as leaders tend to be effeminate.
Well, those cuttlefish that you're so fond of.
Yeah, the cuttlefish, Christopher Luxon. You know, he's not the world's most masculine man. And you know, you don't want to, I don't know, it's an awkward thing to talk about, but it's interesting because it's so pervasive. And you look at all the people who are on that team, and I think, I mean, the amount that women swung to voting Trump was remarkable. The swing of black men, the swing of the Latino vote, I think time's up. I think they've overplayed the hand. They expected to be able to rig it and basically put the padlocks on, and they've missed.
Mm.
We're out of the trap, and now I think everyone's going to be pretty trap shy.
Well, this is also, too, a massive win for me in the culture war, because you've got identity is now no longer coin of the realm. They ran on a policy of identity.
Mm.
And then when you hear Joy Reid say, oh, you know, no, look, the American people just didn't have enough time to find out who she really was. She was vice freaking president for 4 years.
Yeah.
You know, that's, I'm sorry, I call bullshit on that. I call bullshit.
Yeah, no, she's not one of those people that you like more the more you see
them. No. And, you know, so, Hey, look, I jumped around and had a look at some of the reactions in this morning's papers. In the Herald, they went to a pub, because that's what you do. You go to the pub to see an election party. This is a couple of quotes from people that were there. This is a Democratic supporter. He lies about everything. He's misogynistic, racist. He should be nowhere near the White House. He's completely unhinged. The guy's got to have, and this guy's going to have the nuclear codes. He's going to pull out of NATO. He's going to impose tariffs on New Zealand, and that's going to kill export. What about women's right to their own and their right to choose? You know, that's that identity politics. And the thing that cracks me up is this guy's going to have the nuclear codes. Have you had a look at the guy who's got the nuclear codes right now? And you're worried about Donald? Really? Okay. So this, you know, from a cultural perspective for me is huge, because he sees that he's in a way, he's slightly, he sees it. He doesn't do woke. He's sort of, he's, I think, quite black and white in that respect in terms of political correctness or the lack thereof. He will start rolling that back. And the thing that I love, and we saw it in this country once Jacinda left, was when you've got a leadership that doesn't buy into this hocus pocus, right? He doesn't buy into the cultural hocus pocus. And he also doesn't buy into the climate hocus pocus. And I'm going to mention that in a second. When you have that, all of a sudden, all the normies, all the go-alongs to get-alongs that follow all the talking points of these things, because that's what is out in the zeitgeist. So therefore, they think that that's right and that's what it is. When they see that that's no longer there, they actually start thinking for themselves. You've got this little vignette when they can actually, you know, an idea can enter their brain. And we saw that with COVID. I mean, look how quickly after Jacinda left and, you know, old Chippy took over and with his simpering little, you know, sausage roll fingers. And all in New Zealanders, you know, those masks were off and we were back to being completely normal. So you went from mask Nazis 1 minute to, oh, mask, what minute? Don't worry about it. It's all good. And it's because that permission, even though it was unspoken, was there. And I think the same thing's going to happen with the culture war. I really do.
Yeah, I mean, I've spent a lot of time listening to The Daily Wire, you know, the middle of the night. Sometimes I was kind of up and down. If I woke up, I was listening to it about 1 o'clock. And yeah, the consensus is that, yeah, the tide's going out. Yeah, I mean, Ben Shapiro was real interesting. He you know, put together a list of winners and losers, which I thought was really interesting. He said the big winners were Trump and Joe Biden. You know, Joe Biden's going to be pretty vindicated about this. Mm. Elon Musk, you know, Rachel Maddow was calling for him to lose all his government contracts. He didn't have to, but he put himself out there and put his head on the block and won the toss.
And his stock rebounded overnight, and he's $13 billion richer.
Yeah, good on him. Joe Rogan and the entire alternative media industry that countered the narrative. People are going to be, and I hope this happens with RCR as well. You know, we've been cogent with events. The Trump team, he also highlighted, as you said earlier, Charlie Kirk, Donald Trump Jr., way more disciplined this year. Really tight campaign. The big losers, Kamala Harris, terrible and gone. Barack Obama, just mm-hmm. all his choices were bad. And it sort of seems that he can't promote anyone but himself. You know, he's again, described the majority of Americans who vote for Trump as bitter clingers who cling to guns and God. Well, that's not going to change. Big universities, Columbia, et cetera, who wrote all the Dems policies, and the only increase in support was from white university-educated women. Biden was funding them by tens of billions of dollars. Vengeance is coming their way. And the legacy media schmucks. It's quite funny. Every Jewish word for an idiot is a word for a penis. It's quite apt, including schmuck. It's irrecoverable for them. He said their credibility is in the toilet. The Trump versus Hitler trope that they wore out. Yeah, Biden's, you know, their narrative's Biden's well. Kamala is brat and joy. Tim Walz is normal. You know, trans is American masculinity. They just doubled down and tried to cudgel social media into doing their bidding. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens with them.
So then we look at it and we think, right, in reality, what does this mean for New Zealand? And the tariffs are the big ones that is a concern. And I spoke to someone a couple of nights ago who was here for dinner, and, you know, they are in that import, New Zealand export, import internationally food space. So they are genuinely and rightly concerned about tariffs. Now, I heard an interview with Scott Brown this morning, former US ambassador to New Zealand during the first Trump administration, and he is citing not for New Zealand to worry too much about this because these tariffs aren't theoretically going to be universally applied. And then I also saw Tim Grosser. He was interviewed as well in the Herald this morning saying he didn't believe Trump would impose 20% tariffs, but he would move towards them and it would be bad news for New Zealand. So especially wine, though, this our second biggest trading part of wine, dairy. We send a lot of dairy up to there, a lot of lamb, but this is where if we're smart, this is where you've got, is it Todd McClay who's trade and Winston Foreign Affairs? This is where these guys are going to earn their stripes and, yeah, you know, make sure that that relationship is rock solid right from the get-go. And I think Winston is certainly the man for that job.
Well, his congratulatory message was a lot better than Christopher Luxon's. He sort of started out by saying, this is one of our biggest trading partners, so, you know, congratulations. Like, God, what a limp-wristed, you know, sort of signalling, oh, well, I don't really like him, but, we do trade with him. You know, whereas Peters said, the American people have spoken. New Zealand looks forward to working with the next president and vice president. Congratulations to Donald Trump and J.D. Vance on your victory. New Zealand and the United States are two great democratic open societies, and our bilateral relationship will continue to go from strength to strength. That's how you do it.
Mm. Yep. Yeah, I saw that. So whilst it could be tricky, and I think it's something New Zealand has to be aware of, I think we do have the ability, and we are actually in a strong place of negotiation, and we've got the right people here, I think, that will get that done in terms of negotiation. The other thing too, for me, as you said, you hinted to it before with RFK Jr., is the changes and the things that he will do in terms of improving health outcomes. One of the things I also wonder is, in doing so, will he be able to unhinge some of the lids that have been very tightly sealed around the secrecy in terms of COVID, and will we actually get some answers?
Yeah. Well, and also he is a true environmentalist. He's a true conservationist. And, you know, I mean, I've been, as you know, thinking that it's high time we had a campaign to get New Zealand's agriculture out of our Paris Accord commitments, because we've got $30 billion of liabilities sitting there. And, you know, as I always call it, it's going to $70 billion this decade. So, you know, okay, James Shaw got the warm fuzzies getting claps at his little climate conferences by saying, well, you know, New Zealand's power generation's all, a lot of it's from hydro. So, you know, we can't, you know, we're better than most countries there, but where we are bad is agriculture. So please let us include agriculture, because we've got to be a world leader. Okay. So you've got the New Zealand media just going nuts for weeks about National saying, hey, you're going to have to cut your cloth to fit to Dunedin with a hospital that's blown out by $1.5 or $2 billion or whatever it is. But they're just dead silent on how us including agriculture, even though it was specifically exempted from the Paris Accord, it was included so these guys could get clapped, or maybe, as I said, for more nefarious reasons. Maybe he had a funny tasting drink and got, there's a DVD of him doing something and it was used to keep people in line. Who knows? It wouldn't surprise me. But we could make a pretty good case. Hey, look, you know, we're going to do some really, really high quality work on improving our fresh water. We need money for that, and we're going to use that to stimulate employment. We're not going to buy all these overseas carbon credits in a market where 60 to 90% of trades have been found to be fraudulent, because it's just big money stuff. So, yeah, the potential that New Zealand can take it, you know, have some advantage from this win, I think, is considerable. And I think we're going to be waiting a long time for the legacy media to actually get onto that scent trail.
Yeah. When they were at the pub in the Herald article this morning, they also spoke, I think it was at the pub, this one. Oh, actually, it was in the other article. Anyway, they spoke to senior politics lecturer Dr. Maria Amudian, and she told the Herald another impact for New Zealand from a Trump win was climate change, which was going to affect everything, including housing and insurance. He doesn't understand the science and doesn't engage with scientists, she says. Look, I don't know what his grasp on science is, but no, I think he just engages in other scientists, not the scientists that are trotting out one narrative.
You don't follow the money. Sorry, what's the saying? I didn't follow the science. I followed the money and I found the science there.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
At that trough.
Yeah. So the other article actually I had a little look at this morning was from RNZ, and it was from the ABC, because I actually watched a bit of the ABC coverage last night. So if anyone caught the socials that we had on X, I flicked a photo in of the setup in my living room, which was two televisions set up, both with different streams running. And I had an iPad with a third stream and a phone with another with the AP and another one with the New York Times. Honestly, it was device central in our house yesterday. And we had people here.
How was your party?
The party was great. The party was great. And, you know, and what was awesome about it is our sons actually had a lot of their friends over to come and watch the election, because they're all on study leave. And these young men are so engaged in this process right now. This is awesome. This gives me hope.
The most conservative generation since the Second World War.
Oh, they were absolutely riveted. So it was brilliant. And then I had other friends, some Canadian friends over. So of course they were watching it very closely. And so I had one person was like following one area. And even when we were chatting last night with the lads, stuff was being texted through to me in the bedroom. It was hilarious. Anywho, Lee Sales from the ABC, they republished a piece for her in the Radio New Zealand, US election, 6 reasons why Kamala Harris was always on track to lose to Donald Trump. But this, her opening paragraph that stood out to me, it is truly extraordinary the Democrats have convincingly lost a presidential election against one of the most discredited figures in modern American political history, a convicted felon no less. And yet the challenges for the Democratic Party and the campaign's obvious mistakes and missteps have been clear from the day Kamala Harris became the nominee. There is There is little that's surprising about Donald Trump's victory beyond the obvious shock that a candidate so vulgar and base last week, he pretended to fillet a microphone, just the latest pitiful example of a long line, is not unelectable. Now, just in that opening paragraph alone, this is why they don't get it. This is why they lost.
It's hilarious when someone pretends to fillet a microphone.
Well, I watched live that rally.
I didn't see that. But
okay, I watched live the rally. The microphone was really bad, and he had people in the crowd calling out. And I mean, there's tens and tens of thousands of people there because they couldn't hear, and it was the quality of the microphone. And he tried pulling it up closer to his mouth, and it wasn't, the stand wasn't tall enough to be able to do that. And of course, if he, I mean, he leans down, that's going to get, you know, really painful real quick. So what he did is he grabbed the microphone and he ripped it off the stand and unwound it. And if you've ever seen these microphones, they're pretty solidly affixed to these stands. So he rips this microphone off the mic stand and sort of gets it. And then he sort of pats it like, oh my God, I've got it now. And then he actually does it as a handheld microphone.
Right.
Well, according to our friend Lee Sales, he fillets the microphone. I bet she hasn't even seen the clip. But someone has said, oh, you know, that's what it looked like. No, it was a man who was, and he was, you could see he was really pissed off about the quality of the mic. And this is a guy who was annoyed, who was ripping a microphone off a stand so he could talk to the people that had spent hours waiting there and come there to see him.
Yeah,
they just don't get it.
It's going to be, it's really going to be interesting to see how, you know, how the media reacts to this, and then what sort of horror stories that, you know, we're going to hear. Oh, you know, this is going to be bad for climate change. Oh, it's going to be, and you know, I guess it's going to be interesting to see how RCR can cash in on it. You know, we've got to, well, I'm always conscious not to be too gleeful. Like I really hadn't realized how much I was pushing it down, you know, because I really was worried that there was going to be something and I was going to be, you know, disappointed. And I'm equally, you know, you got to try and still be compassionate about people who really do think that, you know, they're not going to get the abortions they crave.
But also it shows you with the abortions, you know, they really pushed that as a massive campaign platform, in fact one of the main campaign platforms. Yeah. And then it also showed you that even on their side, that wasn't the major issue. When you looked at exit polls and they were asking them what the major issue was, for Democratic voters, abortion was usually number three or number four issue. Number one was nearly always the economy, and if it wasn't the economy, it was the democracy.
Choose life. It's sage advice.
Mm.
And you know, one of the things Ben Shapiro obviously really latched onto, and it was something that occurred to him, and he really ran with it, was Trump reminded him of the line in the Bible that Noah was a good man for his time, was the word. He was a flawed character, but he was somehow, you know, an imperfect man chosen by God to do a perfect work, was the inference. And I've always felt that way about Trump, you know. And you can't be a guy who could retreat to comfort and yet chooses discomfort without being, having your eccentricities, let's say, and your ego. And that makes them not necessarily balanced people or easy people to live with or even easy people to listen to all the time. But, you know, sometimes it takes people like that to come forward and do what they do.
Yeah, it does. It does. And one of the other things, like, I mean, I wasn't on the Trump train at all in 2016. In fact, not that I was overly fond of Hillary, I just loved the entire process. And I genuinely believed that Hillary Clinton was going to win. And obviously she didn't. However, there's no such thing as a perfect president. It doesn't exist. And I am excited this time around, again, because of the team. The team that he's built around him. All these
never seen anything like it.
No, and these are all the people that he's bringing into this administration.
Yeah.
That's what I'm excited about. I'm excited that, too, they flipped the Senate.
Yeah.
They flipped the Senate. So the Senate is now, they picked up West Virginia and Ohio. So they now have a majority in the Senate. Looks like they're going to lose a little ground in the House, but they are going to probably still cling on to the majority there, even though it might be slimmed down a little. Then what can they do? What can they do with both those houses in order to get policy through, in order to get all the things that he wants to achieve? He's been very clear about what he wants to achieve. Some of it's going to be more difficult than others. Like, I don't know how he's going to round up 440 million illegals, but, you know, there's going to be, even if he just stems the tide, that will be an improvement. So there's going to be hurdles. But you know what? He's got a great team around him to try and get that sorted out. So that's what I'll be intrigued to see over the next 4 years. He's got 4 years to do it. And you know what? Then he's done. He can't be president again. And then hopefully, the media will, you know, get over their case of TDS and move on. And then you look at the Republican Party. If I was a Republican supporter, I'd be over the moon. I mean, J.D. Vance, what a rock star he's turned out to be.
Yeah, could go so many ways, couldn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah.
The J.D. Vance way, the RFK way, well, that's far less likely because he's going to get a shot at doing what people love him most for. It could go Trump dynasty.
Hmm. Yes, it could go Trump dynasty. And even Florida, he improved his numbers even more in Florida, in no small part due to the incredible management by Ron DeSantis in that state.
Yeah.
There are so many. So
Tulsi
many.
Gabbard as well, we've spoken
Vivek
about.
Vivek Ramaswamy, there's so many of them.
Yeah,
so
Vivek.
There is a tremendous legacy. And you look at that and you think to yourself, gosh, this is what we need in this country. You know.
Yeah. Well, I keep thinking about that remark that Eric Weinstein made, where the fault in capitalism and the reason people keep reverting to communism is because, and I misspoke this the other week, I said it doesn't reward the winners. What I meant was it doesn't reward the losers. It doesn't reward the people who get spat out of the capitalist system. And so, as I said, I see that as a flaw in, say, coalition government's policy as well. I think it's one that New Zealand First could really mine a rich seam in. I know Shane Jones loves mining. But, you know, that thing of, okay, here's some really good missions, which maybe on their own wouldn't be justifiable. So, you know, if we said, okay, we're going to give $1 billion to restoring fresh water. On its own, maybe it's not justifiable when you think of all the other things. If you get New Zealand out of the ETS, so we free up that money to do that. If you say, okay, we're going to have a little bit of residual rising unemployment, we're going to soak it up in a righteous mission. That's going to improve the people. It's going to improve their health. The skills they're going to use within that are then going to improve our productivity within our wider sector. The beauty that's going to be created by that work is going to improve our tourism. It's going to improve our economy. It's going to give opportunities for education. It's, potentially it's an exciting time. I feel excited and optimistic about the future in a way I haven't for some time.
And if there are successes on those Trump policies, particularly in the next 2 years, that bodes well, I would have thought, for New Zealand First, because a number of their policies mirror and align with those Trump policies. So if you start seeing some positive impacts over there, that's great leveraging for New Zealand First here, because, you know, the voter base here starts to see, oh, okay, maybe that isn't quite so bad, or, you know. And I think New Zealand First too, this could be, because New Zealand, I mean, it's, you know, the closest thing we have to the Donald is Winston. So there is, I think, a tremendous time now for New Zealanders to suddenly realise that being actually Kiwi-centric is not necessarily a bad thing.
Once you realise someone's lied to you as well, it's real hard to trust them. And I think the impact, of people maybe, just realizing that the way Donald Trump's been presented to them by the New Zealand media just doesn't tally with what actually happens. It's going to create credibility gap that's a gap that's been growing steadily anyway, but this has accelerated it potentially. Mm. I mean, there are still people who, again, I try not to have too much schadenfreude, but I have watched some liberals of TikTok meltdowns. There's some epic things. There's emotional incontinence.
And the meltdown for me was the fact that Kamala did exactly what Hillary Clinton did in 2016. And she sent out her campaign guy and, oh no, there's still votes to be counted. She's not going to come out and talk to you tonight. Pussy. Hillary Clinton, that was really sour grapes on Clinton's part in 2016, did it absolutely no favours. Kamala doing exactly the same thing does her no favours. And you know what it does? It actually, for those misogynists out there, they go, yeah, look at those female, that's why we won't vote for a female candidate. They don't have the stones to come out and actually face the people when they're down.
Well, that was something I really thought about the whole Kamala thing. It was just such a shame because, as you know, Marie, I love smart, competent women. I'm married to one, I work with them, and they're just, it's such a joy. And, to have that kind of just piss weak thing, oh, you don't like Kamala, you don't like Kamala because you don't like women, or and that was the trick Barack Obama tried to play on black men, and it just absolutely backfired on them. They were just like, and there's some really interesting stuff to come on her. And as I said, we've got far more chance of getting it now that the election results gone that way. The work Candace Owens doing on going through her backstory is pretty interesting. I mean, America, to use a pun, dodged a bullet there. In her biography, it's got a picture of her with her grandmother, this little black woman. Turns out that little black woman died, or her grandmother died 2 years before Kamala was born. And her lineage is mostly Irish slave traders, an Irish, very wealthy Irish family in Jamaica who owned about 1,500 slaves.
Yeah. So, oh, yeah. Trevor Loudon has written a book called Stealth. I think Stealth, True Story Behind Kamala Harris. I think it's called.
And I'm looking forward to your chat with Trevor.
It's booked. It's booked. Trevor's booked. Oh, yeah. Trevor is booked. Trevor is very booked. And he in his book, and he covered that. He outlined that she was never going to be the right candidate. In that ABC article, they called her the accidental candidate. There was nothing freaking accidental about that, people. her the accidental candidate is just, far out. Yeah. Anywho.
Well, Barack Obama, that quote, I should have practiced his accent. I would like to, be president, maybe have someone and just I'm controlling them. And he did that with Biden, and he hoped to do it with Kamala.
Yeah, then it hasn't worked.
So, what we're seeing in a lot of ways is a final rejection of Barack Obama's quite divisive, pleasant-sounding platitudes that don't live up to their promise and drop a whole lot of drone strikes on the country.
Mm. Oh, we're going to have to watch the space. The next couple of months are going to be until the inauguration. It's going to be absolutely nail-biting, I think. So that will be intriguing. And then we've got January. But before we head off, because we are coming up against time, before we head off, there's a couple of things. One is I did a big thank you and lots of feedback on my show yesterday around the interview that Phil and I did. It's still a number of you are still coming across it, just listening to it for the first time. But in news on that front, we have decided to appeal the sentence. So, so we have spoken to our lawyer and that has being lodged, so that needed to be lodged by the 14th of this month. Yeah.
And again, you're doing that in a totally different political environment in a lot of ways, aren't you? I mean, that stuff's coming out. and you're in that residual thing where you were in the right. I mean, I've just been looking at a whole lot more of Naomi Klein's, not Naomi Klein, Naomi Wolf's interviews on the Pfizer papers. And, you know, it's hard to square Phil being prosecuted with what was actually going on with those at the time.
Oh, I mean, I know.
He's such a good font of knowledge, Phil. I get so many great papers from him. Because, you know, it's a mistake to think that when you take a guy like that out of medicine, that he's just going to sit on his hands. Man, he is probably one of the best informed people in New Zealand about the whole issue.
Mm.
He just took that studiousness, which is what you need to get into eye surgery, and just turned it on the issue. And, there's a lot to play on that. Fingers crossed, but well done.
Yeah, no, so that's so nothing will happen in the short term, to be brutally honest. They probably won't get heard until at least the middle.
Work in your favor, I would think.
Exactly, at least the middle of next year. So that we can just park that now for a while and just keep moving, trucking forward. Hey, we also had some great feedback on last week's show as well. So this one is like, hi team, Eminem again, producing a wonderful show with great media analysis. You might really enjoy this incredible, insightful analysis of the Trump team, the X-Men, as he calls them, by Jordan Peterson. Really lifts the hood on the team as a collective and also individuals. Honestly, hard to dislike anything on offer, and you really have to wonder how there is any comparison at all with the offerings from the Democratic Party. Go well, you both. Love your work. Enjoy the last of the election roller coaster, and let's hope all hell doesn't break loose upon the results. Stu from Fodder Fodder. Yeah, thanks, Stu. Well, we are
Fodder Fodder, Stu. Thanks, Stu. Yeah, awesome.
We're all going very well this
morning. I've heard a bit of that, and I'm looking forward to listening to the whole thing. I'm sure the link will be posted in the description.
So here we go, Marty. You'll appreciate this. Yes, totally agree about the blackmail control. The honey trap, Fergus Greenwood goes into this in his book, 180 Degrees. Mossad is linked to Zionism. Cheers, Steve. So there you go. Oopsie daisies.
You don't want someone, if you're printing money, you don't want people in key positions who you can't control, who might fall victim to their own conscience. You've got to have that DVD that you can go tap, tap, tap,
And lastly, this one is from Rosa. Media Matters is my absolute go-to at the moment. Just remember, Kamala Harris's best friend owns The Atlantic and is Steve Jobs' ex-wife, therefore widow. Hence the vitriol about Donald Trump, plus all the jabbed rhetoric from Rosa. Ha ha, I didn't know that, Rosa. Thank you.
It's a big club and you ain't in it. You and I are not in the big club, as George Carlin said.
Indeed. Yeah. And as I said, 2057 is the text number. Inbox at realitycheck.radio is the email if you want to do that. Now, this Sunday, we have a special Foundation Club members post-election Zoom. So if you're a Foundation Members Club member, do look out for that email in your inbox, and that will be coming to you. I'm hosting that, and we've got actually a really cool lineup. I definitely know that we've got Professor Ramesh Thakur is going to be there, along with Maurice Williamson, and we'll have others dropping in and dropping out. I think Peter Williams is going to be on the panel. You're going to be there. So it's going to be a really great discussion about everyone's thoughts with the election. And of course, hopefully by then, those final states would have come in. We'll know the makeup of what Congress is going to look like. We'll know how big his mandate will be in terms of those electoral college seats. We'll see whether or not anything is sparked off in the wider world in terms of protests, you know, once they come out of their absolute crying jag and stupor and moments.
Yeah. Two more things before we go.
Yes.
Your Melissa Davies interview was awesome.
Oh, Melissa,
I mean, when I say awesome, I mean horrifying.
Yeah.
But great journalism.
Thank you.
And yeah, the second thing is, and you know, we like to just think on our feet at Media Matters. you don't hear shows that have eight producers and scripts. So we sort of, you know, just sometimes make it up as we go along. But I'm really interested in hearing from people. What do you think about the idea of a campaign to pull New Zealand's agriculture out of our emissions? You know, it's $30 billion.
Yeah.
We've got other things that we can do with that. And I think that could be a way to energize the rest of New Zealand, maybe catch this wave of rejection of the, I mean, what's the word you use instead of bullshit?
Oh.
Let's just say bullshit.
Bullshit. Yeah, and that's a great idea. 2057, if you think you're in with Marty on that. There you go. The Melissa Davies interview, yeah, that was part one. If you haven't heard it, Melissa was so, oh my gosh, she was so strong. I do have to thank very, very much Bex, my producer. So Bex looks after me and Rodney, and she did a lot of the
hard. Great woman, very fond of Bex.
And Bex did a lot of
gentlewoman.
Did a lot of the hard yards on that interview, because as you can imagine, you know, there was two decades that we needed to cover, and how do you cover a couple of decades just in a couple of hours, which is the challenge that we were set. And Bex did a lot of the groundwork to allow me to be able to distill down as much of the information as we could in that space of time. To be brutally honest with you, I mean, really, what Melissa and I talk about both this week and next week really just scratched the surface of what was going on. There were so many layers to the story.
And this is a story that mainstream media had refused to touch, isn't it?
It's certainly something that they should have been talking about and haven't. Melissa has worked so hard to try and get justice for her daughter, for her grandchildren.
Are there some horror stories of grandparents whose kids get on the pee and then they're raising grandkids when they really should be knitting socks?
Yeah. So, if, as I said before, after that interview, if you're somebody that's been in that situation, because, of course, there's this apology coming up, isn't there, from after the Royal Commission with Aranga Tamariki, I can tell you right now that will be a very, very bitter pill for Melissa, considering, you know, they're doing this formal apology and what's going on with her and her family is still continuing to this day, even though they know that it's wrong.
So, yeah, you can look at things in very Buddhist terms, I think, in terms of what's right, you know, like what reduces suffering. That's a noble cause. And, you know, again, with this election, I'm thinking about those 300,000 children that have just disappeared into America and been trafficked and, you know, all sorts of awful things. And the fact that there's a political movement that is signaling a willingness to deal with that, I think is a great sign of hope. And, you know, I think the apologies for abuse in state care is a great thing of hope here. And I think we have to be careful that we don't allow the fact that at one point that sort of thing was so low paid that it attracted exactly the wrong sort of people. It shouldn't put us off creating institutions that offer children an option to escape from abusive situations and allow them to have confidence they won't be going into a worse situation.
Yeah, yeah. And also, too, we need to embolden them to be able to remove children, as Melissa pointed out, that when gangs get involved, they back right off. And that is wrong, because those are the kids that are most vulnerable, and those are the children that need to be protected, and they need to put their big boy and girl pants on, and they need to get those kids out and get those kids safe.
Yeah. I mean, I've this is a long goodbye, isn't it?
I know, it is a long goodbye.
I've told that story before about sitting in a mongrel mob tinny house with a two-year-old whose mum was off on a pee bender, and I just talked to him a little bit and just played with something. And when I left, he cried and my heart broke. I did seriously think about just saying to, you know, the people who actually, whose house it was, were quite nice, even though they were senior mongrel mob leaders. I did feel like just popping in my car and just say, hey, look, I'll look after this kid. But, you know, you can't do that. He would have been better off coming home with me.
Mm. Anyhow, right, we need to get going. I've got a day job to get to. So thank you, everyone, for listening. Of course, this has been Marty and I here with Media Matters. And as I said, I'll be here with the Foundation Members Club on Sunday. Both of us will be, and you will be fourth estating tomorrow. So lots of M&M still to come this week.
Yeah, fourth estating and political panelling.
Woohoo! Double R, double Marty.
Triple Marty.
Yes, triple Marty. There you go. Woohoo!
I might even call Rodney today. I was talking to him and I said, oh, you know, I've been moved to give you a call on your talk back because there's a few things I want to talk to. So I might just go for absolute overexposure.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
Have a great week, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. And we'll talk to you again soon here with Media Matters and M&M and M&M and M&M and M&M on Reality Check Radio. All right, take care. Bye.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas. From great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more, the RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.